This is the Archbishop of Canterbury's address to the TUC Economics Conference at Congress House in London. Economy is simply the Greek word for housekeeping. Remembering this is a useful way of getting things in proportion so that we don't lose sight of the fact that economics is primarily about the decisions we make so as to create a habitat that we can actually live in. We are still haunted by the dogma that the economic world, economic realities, economic motivations and so on belong in a completely different frame of reference from the sort of human decisions we usually make and from considerations of how we build a place to live. And to speak about building a place to live, a habitat, reminds us too that we look for an environment that is stable, sustainable in the popular jargon, a home that we can reasonably expect will be an asset for the next generation. Economics, understood in abstraction from all of this, is not just an academic error. It actually dismantles the walls of the home. Appealing to the market as an independent authority, unconnected with human decisions about housekeeping, has meant in many contexts over the last few decades a ruinous legacy for heavily indebted countries, large-scale and costly social disruption even in developed economies, and most recently, the extraordinary phenomena of a financial trading world in which the marketing of toxic debt became the driver of money-making, until the bluffs were all called at the same time. If we are not to be caught indefinitely in a trap we have designed for ourselves, we have to ask what an economy would look like if it were genuinely focused on making and sustaining a home, a social environment that offered security for citizens, including those who could not contribute in obvious ways to productive and profit-making business, an environment in which we felt free to forego the tempting fantasies of unlimited growth in exchange for the knowledge that we could hand on to our children and grandchildren a world, a social and material nexus of relations that would go on nourishing proper three-dimensional human beings, people whose family bonds, imaginative lives and capacity for mutual understanding and sympathy were regarded as every bit as important as their material prosperity. Practically speaking, this means that both at the individual and the national level, we have to question what we mean by growth. The ability to produce more and more consumer goods, not to mention financial products, is in itself an entirely mechanical measure of wealth. It sets up the vicious cycle in which it is necessary all the time to create new demand for goods and thus new demands on a limited material environment for energy sources and raw materials. By the hectic inflation of demand, it creates personal anxiety and rivalry. By systematically depleting the resources of the planet, it systematically destroys the basis for long-term well-being. In a nutshell, it is investing in the wrong things. In reality, writes Kenny Tang, a leading Asian expert in sustainable development, there are only two sources of wealth in the world today. The wealth that flows from our use of the Earth's resources and ecosystems, all powered by incoming solar radiation, our natural capital, and the wealth that flows from the use of our hands, brains and spirits, our human capital. It is a sharp reminder that exactly the same threat lies ahead in both the ecological context and the human. The exhaustion of resources, the depletion of natural capital and the shrinking of human capital by the abuse of brain and spirit that results from social fragmentation and from personal stress and lostness in inhuman patterns of working. To quote another very recent discussion, Tim Jackson, writing in the Sustainable Development Commission's excellent report, Prosperity Without Growth, underlines the need for what he calls a new ecology of investment, in which the criterion of short-term returns is not seen as the sole deciding factor, and we learn how to invest in infrastructure and public goods and new low-carbon technologies. This will mean, he writes, revisiting the concepts of profitability and productivity and putting them to better service in pursuit of long-term social goals. Along with this, a point flagged both by Jackson and by Zach Goldsmith in yet another provocative new essay, The Constant Economy, How to Create a Stable Society, we have to ask about green taxes, including green tax breaks, that will check environmental irresponsibility and build up resources to address the ecological crises that menace us. The contraction and convergence proposals are among the best known and most structurally simple of these, and it would be a major step to hear some endorsement of them from a body such as this. It is, of course, connected with other proposals about currency exchange taxation, the Tobin tax idea. The point is that we should be thinking about taxation neither as an unreasonable burden on enterprise nor as a simple mechanism of redistribution, but as a potentially sophisticated tool.